Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Seattle Nice. I'm David Hyde here, as always, with Erica C. Barnett of Publicola. Erica, it's a sunny weekend day. Do you have any great plans for this afternoon? Anything exciting happening in the Barnett household?
I have a cold, David, as I did last week, so you're basically looking at my activity for the day. Plus, writing Publicola's endorsements, which are coming out next week.
Ooh, wow. What day do they come out?
You know, they come out when they come out, David. You know, the
All right. Look for those when they come out.
They're going to come out when she actually gets around to doing them.
There you go. Sandeep Kaushik, any plans for yourself for this afternoon? Anything exciting happening in the...
I happen to be up on Orcas Island this morning.
Nice.
And so most of my day will be taken in the trip back to Seattle.
All right, we're talking about the Seattle City Council races. Ballots are out. Has everybody got their ballots in their mailboxes? Have they arrived yet for both of you? Mine have arrived. And the question is, Erica C. Barnett, which race do you want to talk about first because it's just so fucking interesting?
To me, you know, the most interesting race is the race to fill the seat that Shama Sawant has filled in D3 for many years now. That is the district that includes Capitol Hill, the central district, kind of central East Seattle. And, you know, there's a candidate that is, I think, very exciting in that race, one of the most exciting candidates in any race, and that's Alex Hudson. And I know Sandeep can't really talk about her too much because he's working for her, so I will do the honors. She's a former head of the First Hill Neighborhood Association, head of Transportation Choices Coalition, and, you know, she is a wonk's wonk, which makes me excited, and has a lot of ideas for promoting density and safer transportation and all that good stuff. Her opponent is a woman named Joy Hollingsworth, who is a member of a family who owns a cannabis farm, and she is endorsed by Mayor Bruce Harrell. So there's some interesting contrasts in that race. And, you know, I just think it's really interesting to see who is going to replace Shama Sawant in that district. And, you know, as we've discussed before, I mean, I think Sawant is known more as kind of an iconoclastic person who advocates for ideas promoted by her own socialist alternative party, and not so much somebody who is out in the district meeting with people. So I think whoever wins that race, it's going to be a big contrast just to the people of that district and their communications with their council member and just neighborhood responsiveness.
We always come full circle. It always comes back to Shama Sawant.
It really does. I don't know what we're going to do.
I'm going to miss her. That's all I can say. Sandeep Kaushik, I'm not asking you that question, but what makes D3 interesting to you? I mean, you're endorsing Alex Hudson, but what about the dynamics in that race? Or tell us something interesting.
Well, yeah, I'm more than endorsing. Just as Erica said, I'm actually consulting on Alex's campaign here. So just full disclosure, I'm not a kind of detached, neutral observer on this. Erica's, I think, absolutely right that this is a race that's shaping up to be Alex and Joy Hollingsworth. I should mention that there are actually 8 candidates in the race. It's one of the more crowded council races. And in the kind of standard sort of way in which I think about Seattle City Council races, there are really 2 lanes, what I would call a kind of more moderate progressive lane and then a more kind of left lane, more left progressive lane. And I think Joy, with running with the backing of the mayor and the Seattle Times, is running more in that kind of moderate progressive lane. And Alex, I think, with the backing of the Stranger and some of the big progressive labor unions, is running a bit more in that left lane. So I do think those two are the ones who have raised the most money and have the most endorsements and are very, very likely to emerge from a crowded field. But there are lots of other candidates, including, I would say, on the left lane, not surprising, in D3, it's been pretty crowded. And so there's a number of other candidates kind of making their pitches on the left, either via kind of urbanist appeals, or Alex Cooley, who's another cannabis owner, who is running on full-on, kind of making it the centerpiece of his campaign, a full-on legalization of all drugs in Seattle. So there's like a number of different species and flavors of kind of left activism to choose from among the candidates. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's Alex and Joy coming through.
Why do you say that? What's the, you said endorsements. Is it mostly just the Stranger endorsement for Alex Hudson that helps her get through?
I think that's a very big endorsement, particularly in that district, right? The Capitol Hill is the traditional home of the Stranger. It's not actually located there anymore. They're down in Pioneer Square. But for years and years and years, back when Erica and I worked at The Stranger, it was right there on 11th, right by Cal Anderson Park. And that has been the traditional, you know, young, renter-heavy, Pike, Pine, Broadway kind of corridor that's been sort of the core of the Stranger's audience. So yeah, that endorsement matters a lot in that district. The Seattle Times endorsement matters too, and Joy got that, right? Like, so in a race where none of the campaigns, this is a topic for a different day, because I think all these campaigns are taking democracy vouchers, which means your spending is really tightly capped. So there's very little money to actually communicate with voters, which makes endorsements even more valuable and important. I actually think it's a perverse and negative effect of the democracy voucher system. But anyway, we can talk about that at some other time.
I will say I was at an event with a bunch of Alex Hudson supporters, and I was talking to younger people there, and they'd never heard of The Stranger. So maybe young people in the, you know, Gen Z range don't vote as much as old farts like us. But I did think that was kind of interesting and speaks a little bit against the value of endorsements. But your point is absolutely correct, especially with fewer endorsements out there. You know, it really does come down to The Stranger, The Seattle Times, and Publicola.
Yeah, Publicola's endorsements are coming out. Also, the Urbanist is.
Yeah, I think the Urbanist also has.
I think the Urbanist is a growing voice. Yeah,
I want to get past the Alex Hudson Love Fest here in just a minute, but I do want to bring up the independent expenditure thing. It's a little disingenuous to claim that there's a totally level playing field between these candidates if there's going to be independent expenditures. No.
Well, you know, this was a foreseeable consequence of the Democracy Voucher program, right? Some of us, including me, who ran the campaign against Democracy Vouchers, predicted that a huge amount of money flowing into independent expenditures as a result, and lo and behold, that's what's happened. Right now, there are only two independent expenditure campaigns that have been filed in D1 and D4, both by kind of quote-unquote sort of business community.
Not quote-unquote. I mean, it's primarily real estate and... it's primarily real estate, and then also sort of the
real estate
the restaurant
yeah.
association. So not quote unquote.
Yeah.
Absolutely business interest.
Well, okay. Folks. Yeah. And you know, they raised, in the kind of mid $20,000 range in each of those two IEs, which is something, but not a huge amount, at least at this point. But who knows? More money may flow into those. I would not be at all surprised if we see an IE from Labor in at least one of the races, probably at this point D5, which is North Seattle.
Sandeep Kaushik, we've talked about D3. Erica says that race is exciting. Any others in the city that really stand out to you? Or is there a single one other than D3 that you think we should be talking about first or second in this case?
Yeah, there are a number of interesting races aside from D3, but the one I will focus on is District 1, which is West Seattle. And that's to replace Erica's favorite council member, Lisa Herbold. But Lisa's decided not to run again. And so that's, again, one of the open seats of which there are a kind of unprecedented number, right? In this election, we have four open seats out of the seven seats that are up, and a fifth council member is running for county council. So we're going to have a majority new faces on the council. D1, it's again another one of the races that's crowded. There are a lot of candidates running, but there are two that I think have emerged as very likely to come through the primary. Running on the left is Maren Costa, who was an Amazon employee who led environmental activist work to pressure Amazon on their environmental records and claims that she was, and I think likely true, was fired as a result and is now running for the city council. And then, and she's very much running in the left lane, right? I mean, at the Labor Council Forum, I think she said something that while it's not going to hurt her getting through the primary, I think kills her in a general election, where she said it wasn't a mistake for the city council to pledge to defund the police by 50%. I think we'll be hearing a lot of that in the general election if she does come through. And then the other candidate running much more in a kind of, you know, moderate progressive, public safety focused kind of campaign is Rob Sacca, who is a lawyer at Microsoft and then at Meta. African-American, has a fascinating personal story growing up in extreme poverty and foster care and then kind of rising up to become a successful attorney. But he's very much running on this current status quo is in the city is not great. It's largely the city council's fault. They were too ideological and we need to get better and do better on public safety. So that's a sort of classic left-center matchup that we're seeing in D1.
I agree. That's a really interesting race. Sandeep, if you could, and I want to say a couple more things about Marin Costa, but if you could summarize what Rob Saka's policy platform is, I will give you $5 because I, you know, I've watched a lot of appearances that he has done. And even in his interview with me way back in, I want to say February, he has about 5 talking points that he sticks to really consistently. And, you know, as somebody who, you know, obviously cares about policy and cares about what the city council actually does, I am not hearing a lot of stuff other than I want to support the mayor. I want to support the mayor. I want to support the mayor. I mean, I think that's probably true. I think he would vote for, you know, whatever Mayor Bruce Harrell says he should vote for. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, he is allied with the mayor, but also because when he talks, I mean, he talks really consistently about just wanting to be supportive to the mayor's agenda. I think your characterization of Marin Costa, or Marin Costa rather, is a little disingenuous. I didn't attend this one forum you're referring to, but when I have talked to her and when I have watched her at other forums, I mean, she's talked pretty consistently about wanting to hire 1,400 police officers, which is kind of a maximalist position on police hiring. So I think you're characterization of her as some kind of defund lefty is a little off base.
She said that at the Labor Council forum.
I know.
We're going to be hearing it a lot. I think we're going to be hearing it a lot if she comes through.
Yeah, I'm sure the IEs that you work on for Rob Saka or
are going to
point that out.
So that is not true.
But
I will say that would be campaign malpractice not to use that against her in that
district.
Well,
okay. But see, again, like I'm not a political consultant. I'm someone who looks at reality and what people are actually saying consistently on the campaign trail as opposed to finding a gotcha. And I think that if you actually look at what she's saying and listen to what she's saying, which I realize a lot of voters aren't able to do, and they see these campaign mailers like the ones that you did against Nicole Thomas Kennedy, you know, and it paints a caricature. And I think in the case of Marin Costa, that would be particularly unfair because it is not what she is saying, and she is not a radical lefty.
Bullshit. She's running really far left. She's running really far left.
I sat down with the woman for an hour. I didn't go to just one forum. I mean,
can I jump in? If you look at the Seattle Times questionnaire, which I'm sure you both have, do you support Bruce Harrell's plans to increase Seattle police staffing to 1,400 officers? Yes. That's what Erica is just bringing up, Sandeep. But also, should Seattle prosecute individuals for public drug use? No. Should Seattle reduce the police department's budget? Maybe. Should Seattle increase the police department's budget? Maybe. That's a contrast with Rob Saka, right? I mean, but you're saying it's not as extreme a contrast as the one that Sandeep is portraying necessarily.
I'll just point out that Sandeep's candidate, Alex Hudson, actually was more lefty on those answers than Marin Costa.
Yeah, that's true, but that highlights a huge difference between the electorates in D1 and D3, right? D3 is...
It highlights a huge like inconsistency in your argument, Sandeep.
Performance of voters in District 3 is about 20 points farther left than the rest of the city. With the possible exception of District 2.
But Sandeep, you're calling her a raving lefty, and you're supporting somebody who is to the left of her. So I'm just pointing out that...
I'm saying she's running way to the left of her own voters, and that's going to cause her a big problem in the general election, in D1. Look, we've talked about this before. Your favorite council member, Lisa Herbold. Lisa won several elections in D1, but her polling numbers have been atrocious recently, and they tanked after she got on board the defund abolition.
I'm just so tired of this rhetoric.
Well, you may not like it, but that's the reality
What I don't like is misrepresenting the way that people actually talk and what they say their priorities are in favor of hyper focus on this one thing that happened in 2020, and even hyper focus on this defund concept that never happened with candidates who weren't even on the city council at the time, and sort of trying to tie them to something that, you know, happened 3 years ago, despite and often in contradiction to what they are actually saying with their human mouths on the campaign trail. And I know that the politics is a dishonest business. And, you know, that's how a lot of people get elected. But I just want to put a line in the sand for half a second and say, like, let's not mischaracterize these people like quite so much.
And let's just talk about these two then. Do you support Mayor Bruce Harrell's plans to increase Seattle Police Department staffing to 1,400 officers? Both Rob Saka and Marin Costa say yes. Should Seattle reduce the police department's budget? Marin Costa, maybe. Rob Saka, no. So that's a clear difference. But you're saying it's not as extreme as Sandeep makes it out to be if she's also saying increase SPD staffing to 1,400 officers. I mean, Sandeep, Erica, what about that? I mean, I think we're seeing some pretty clear differences here, but they're not the differences maybe that either of you are suggesting.
I think we're seeing a first-time candidate saying different things to different audiences at different times, right? I mean, which is sometimes something that happens sometimes with candidates who haven't been elected before and are running for the first time. And so it's a little all over the
map. You guys are, and I don't know how much either of you has sat down with Maren Costa or gone to other events where she has spoken. She says, we need to make sure that Seattle is the best place on the planet to be a police officer. And then she says, beyond that, we really need to stand up this third department, which is Bruce Harrell's proposal to do a third department that is alternatives to police responses to crisis calls. So she is supporting the Harrell agenda there. And, you know, I will say policing isn't the only issue. She's also proposed a vacancy tax, which I think to, you know, kind of argues more for Sandeep's point, actually, that, you know, that is a pretty lefty position, a tax on vacant units. You know, I think it's that is a kind of questionable tactic in Seattle. It's unclear how much money it would raise. But I just think that describing her as a far leftist is really disingenuous. That's all.
She's running in the left lane. Whether you want to say it's far left or not, she's running in the left lane in that race. And Rob's running in the moderate lane.
I mean, Sandeep, tell me some about
and there's
some
and again, it's a crowded
Rob's
race.
Positions on things.
First of all, I Rob has centered his campaign around changing our policies related to public safety. He's supportive of the mayor's approaches on encampment cleanups, for instance, in a way that Maren is not. He talks about the fact that in his neighborhood in West Seattle, in Delridge, there's been some encampment and RV-related issues, and the city's been noticeably slow in addressing those, and that the city needs to take more proactive actions on those sorts of things. He's obviously going to be more supportive of funding, expanding the police. I believe he said that he supported he would have voted for the misdemeanor drug penalty vote. And Erica, you may know, where's Maren on that? I would assume she would have been a no on that vote.
She's a no on should Seattle prosecute individuals for public drug use. That this questionnaire came up before the state acted on Blake, it looks like. All right, so let's move on then to what do you want to talk about? What's a really fun one where we're all going to get along? District 6.
District 6 is Dan Strauss, the incumbent, is being challenged by Pete Hanning, Fremont neighborhood guy who owned the Red Door for about 20 years. It's a bar in Fremont. And is, you know, active in works for the Fremont Chamber of Commerce and is, you know, I would say running against Strauss, who is a pretty, you know, moderate city council member. Hanning is running against him somewhat from the right, but, you know, arguing that he would be more effective. I've been asking for campaign mailers on Twitter, and one of the ones that I have received a copy of is Dan Strauss saying that he absolutely has always supported funding the police, and it has this long list of votes that he took for in favor of funding the police, and it kind of has a picture of him with his arms folded, looking really tough, and you know, in his blazer, and I think that is, you know, I don't think this vote, you know, this issue in 2020 during the protests over George Floyd's murder should be the only issue in the city council races. But Strauss did express support at the time for reducing police funding along with, you know, most of the council. And I think it's a little disingenuous for him to bring this up and make it an issue sort of preemptively to combat any argument from Hanning that he supported defunding and really portray himself as this super tough guy, you know, fighting for police funding, because I don't think that is accurate either. And I think Hanning's going to slam him on that.
Yeah, a little disingenuous. I got to say, man, when I saw Dan's mailer, I laughed out loud. And I actually, like, I pinged his campaign consultant, Dean Nielsen, who's a friend, and said, you know, ballsy play, man, ballsy play. Because the reality was, like, yeah, to be fair to Dan, he was newly elected to the council in 2019. all of the tumult and blow up and difficulties of 2020 happened right after. But there's no question that during that era, he was sort of following around, you know, at the time, Lorena Gonzalez was the council president and Teresa Mosqueda, you know, the budget chair. He was very much allying himself with the left wing of the council, right? Including on issues of policing and all of that stuff. And I think the 2021 elections were a real wake-up call for him with Bruce Harrell winning, with NTK going down in flames. And since then, he's been gradually accelerating until what is now a kind of stampede towards the moderate lane, like where, as you say, he's trying to kind of rewrite history.
Well, a little bit because
to sort of present himself as a kind of Sarah Nelson member when that's not what his track record.
I mean, the rest of the mailer, I think, you know, and it's funny, it's distributing, you know, it's been going around on the sort of the right wing Twitter sphere and the right wing, you know, I don't know where else they are, Facebookosphere, with, you know, sort of heavily cropped down to omit the part of the mailer that actually includes a bunch of Strauss's votes. Because again, the city council never defunded the police. In fact, they have consistently funded SPD's requests for funding year after year. And Strauss did vote for that. So his actual votes have not been anti-police. But the reason I say it's a little disingenuous is because I don't think that he has made this some huge issue, been sort of out on the right on it. But he does list a bunch of votes that he took to fund the police, which
he was also the deciding vote, the fifth vote in the last budget session to cut the 80 police positions, right, from the SPD budget, which was a huge, again,
80 positions,
right?
That the police said they couldn't fill, in addition to all the hundreds of positions that they also can't fill that are funded year after year after year after year.
I'll just say I noticed he didn't list that vote on his mailer.
Yeah, because you know, it's been consistently misrepresented by people like you, Sandeep.
Uh-huh.
I think we should mention that there are four other candidates, you know, also running for that race, so we don't want to neglect them too much. But again, these are the Seattle Times and Stranger endorsed candidates, right? So that's part of the reason why you're both suggesting that they might be the ones to come through.
Well, that's not why. I mean, I think there's often, you know, I mean, to be clear, like when I cover races and probably when you cover council races, David, you know, I mean, we know who the front runners are in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
It's people who, you know, who have lots of endorsements, not just the Times and Stranger, and also have, you know, financial support and are not saying fringy things, you know, which is the case in some races. And so I'm not trying to be rude to the other candidates. I just have limited resources and I want people to have information that's useful to them in actually, you know, who we're going to elect, because only one person can ultimately win.
Yeah, in this race, Dan, the incumbent, and Pete are clearly the as Erica says, the front runners in this race. And I do want to say one thing about Dan. I mean, because I was just critical of him. But look, I think his move, stampede or whatever you want to call it, towards the center is a smart political play on his part, right? And if I'm wearing my kind of political, you know, consultant hat here, I would call that race, a general election race between Pete and Dan, a kind of toss-up race. I think that's going to be a really hard-fought, close race between the two of them, particularly since D6 just gained a chunk of Magnolia into the district, which makes it a little bit more moderate. So I think, you know, Dan has figured out where he thinks the voters of his district are and is doing his best to get there and meet them where they're at. And, you know, we'll see how it plays and how it works. But right now, that looks like a close race to me.
I'm not a political consultant, so I don't understand these things very well. But, you know, back in 2020, Strauss basically said that, you know, he supported the idea of exploring 50% cuts. And then since then, said, well, that didn't mean I supported defunding. I want to contrast that with Andrew Lewis and move at some point here to District 7, you know, who has been, I think, a little bit more clear in saying, hey, I think 50% cuts was a mistake. You know, I think that the focus on finances and sort of tying that to the issue of police reform was a political mistake because it led to a backlash. So I was wrong to have said as clearly as I did, you know, that I supported 50% funding cuts back then. And, you know, here's my position now. Whereas Dan's been kind of squishy on what he said back then. This mailer, you know, sort of further obscures that. Lewis responded to my requests, for clarity on Friday about, you know, what his position exactly was, whereas I just got a statement from Dan Strauss on it. So, yeah, I'm sure he's actually running the right sort of political campaign. But for me as a reporter, I'm a little bit like, come on, I just want to know, like, you know, exactly what do you think? And I got a little bit more of a clear answer from Lewis. So I wonder if either of you could, you know, compare and contrast what we've heard from the two of them on that issue.
Sure, I'm happy to jump in. I do think Andrew earlier and more clearly, really almost since the moment the 21 elections happened, Andrew Lewis in District 7, which is again a downtown and a district that's probably tilts a little bit more on the moderate side, has really distanced himself from some of the positions he took in 2020 in a very clear way. And he said, you know, that pledge to defund the police by 50% was a mistake. I think he said that other things that happened during that period were not productive and were a mistake. I think in a way that, you know, Dan sort of seen the light and found Jesus on this stuff pretty abruptly and pretty recently, whereas Andrew's been sort of laying the groundwork for his, you know, kind of return to a more, Andrew is a strong progressive, right? And his voting record on the council, you know, leans towards the left wing, but on this very left city council, he is a kind of swing vote, even though I think his instincts are on the progressive side. But that said, on some of these issues, he clearly has been backing away for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think one reason that you probably got a statement from Dan and a call from Andrew is that Andrew really likes talking to the press. But you know, he likes to kind of hash out this stuff in public. And I think Sandeep's right. I think he has, you know, changed his positions on a number of things. Most recently, you know, when he voted against, you know, sort of at the last minute, apparently, when he voted against the proposed new law to empower City Attorney Ann Davison to prosecute people for public drug use and simple possession. And now has said that now that there's a task force meeting to come up with some alternatives to community court and, you know, therapeutic alternatives for drug users, at least on the first couple of offenses, he's going to flip his vote. So, you know, I mean, he's somebody who changes his mind and changes his votes for sure. I think, you know, in that race, Andrew Lewis is being challenged from the right by a couple of people. One is Queen Anne, retiree, former, I think, Navy officer, if I'm not mistaken, Bob Kettle, who, you know, has said he's gonna sweep encampments, and Andrew Lewis wants to defund the police, and that's bad, and that's kind of his argument. I've gotten that mailer. He is interestingly endorsed by a member of the Seattle City Council, Sarah Nelson, who's kind of, you know, often votes against the rest of the council, to the right of the rest of the council, and is endorsing her colleague's opponent, which is pretty unusual. And then, of course, the one that's gotten a lot of attention in the media, although I don't think that's going to translate into votes, is Olga Sagan. Apologies if I'm pronouncing her last name wrong, but she is the owner of Piroshki Piroshki, who sort of famously shut down her business for 10 months when there was a shooting outside, and in response to, you know, drug crimes essentially outside her location on 3rd and Pine.
Yeah, I'll just say, like, in the same way that I think Maren Costa shot herself in the foot politically with the comment about the city council was right to pledge to defund, I think Olga Sagan, while she has sucked up a lot of media oxygen, and you're right, got a lot of attention as the Piroshki Piroshki owner, and, you know, it featured prominently on TV news on Como and stuff like that, she also, like, tied herself into a rhetorical pretzel trying to explain whether or not she voted for Trump in 2020. The upshot of it being, it seems pretty clear. I mean, I think she's denying it now that she did vote for Trump, but I don't know that anybody actually believes her on that. And including myself, it sounds to me like she voted for Trump in 2020. And so I think if she gets through that race, Andrew will use that against her and or others if there's an IE in that race, and they'll crush her like a bug. Like, politically, I think that's a really damaging thing.
Although, as we discussed last week, you know, Ken Wilson, who is running in District 4, also supported Trump and Tiffany Smiley, you know, as apparently did Ann Davison, the city attorney, the Republican city attorney, who switched parties, she says, during the Trump administration. So it's not necessarily supporting Trump anymore is not necessarily a deal breaker in Seattle. So which kind of, I think, Sandeep, argues against your claim that everybody in Seattle is either far left or moderate.
First of all, just correcting the record here, Ann Davis has said she did not vote for Trump.
Okay. So she decided to become a Republican during the Trump administration.
Yeah. I think supporting Trump is pretty disqualifying, even for, you know, most moderate lane voters in Seattle. And I think if Ken Wilson comes through with Ron Davis in D4, we talked about this race last week, I think that'll be a real boon to Ron Davis. In the same way, if it's Olga that comes through instead of Bob Kettle, I think Andrew's, you know, in a really strong position. Voters vote on, they don't tend to vote on a checklist of issues. They tend to vote on who they feel best represents their worldview and shares their kind of values and who they have a cultural affinity with, right? And so people who are saying or can't clearly answer the question of whether or not they supported Donald Trump, I think start in a very, very bad place in a Seattle city municipal election.
Let me ask then, actually, just for both those races, D6 and D7, you know, even though there are some Republican pockets, these are pretty progressive areas. Why is the issue, you know, that we're talking about and the candidates are talking about and voters are talking about homelessness and public safety? I mean, if the conversation were about how do we create a more equitable society, should we tax capital gains? Should we tax Amazon and some of these big corporations? Why is the city, you know, focused so much on these public safety issues and not questions of kind of equity and those kinds of progressive issues where, you know, where they'd be a bigger advantage to folks like Lewis or maybe Strauss?
First of all, those other issues are getting talked about some, but the reason the focus is so much on homelessness and public safety is because voters have indicated really clearly that those are by far the top two issues for them. With housing affordability, which is kind of tied to homelessness to some extent or linked to homelessness as a kind of strong third issue. But those are by far the issues that are most front and center on voters' minds. There are candidates that are talking about capital gains tax. Alex Hudson, we talked about in D3, was the first candidate to come out for a municipal capital gains tax to put on top of the state tax. And so those issues do have some resonance, but the reason so much ink is getting spilled and so much, you know, rhetoric is being put out there on homelessness and public safety is because that's sort of top of mind for voters right now.
Same question for me. Why are people focusing on these issues?
Yeah. And how much different would the conversation be, or is there any chance that these issues will come to the fore at any point? You know, again, back to that Seattle Times questionnaire, Pete Hanning does not support increasing the rate of the jumpstart or any other existing tax to address revenue shortfalls, for example. You know, and, you know, I haven't seen a poll, you know, Chambers always putting out polls saying that voters are anti-tax, but I'm not sure they're so anti-progressive tax here in the city of Seattle. So what about that?
Issues don't exist in a vacuum. Homelessness and public safety are obviously huge issues, but there are other huge issues in the city of Seattle right now. The fact that buses are not reliable because, you know, there's not enough bus drivers and there's a need for funding. And there's issues that impact people's everyday lives that people do think about. They don't come up necessarily in campaign mailers or in, you know, questionnaires from conservative newspapers, but they definitely are issues. And, you know, I will say Bob Kettle has talked, as you mentioned, he's not a pro-tax guy and, in fact, has made some, you know, to me, a little frustrating comments about we need to figure out if the city has a deficit or a surplus and before we look into proposing any new taxes of any kind. Hanning, as you said, is not in favor of increasing taxes. So that issue actually is coming up a little bit and bubbling up to the surface, I think, because of this idea of a capital gains tax. So it is the case that these issues are just quite cyclical. There was a time that I think I've mentioned before when transportation was like the only issue on candidates' lips in Seattle. So right now it's definitely public safety and homelessness, but candidates are trying to talk about other issues. Now, whether it's getting coverage, you know, is a different question.
David, I think you're making a good point, though. I will just add here, like back when the jumpstart tax was being considered, right, which is the tax that Teresa Mosqueda championed and, you know, created this tax on jobs in the city that pay more than at large companies that pay more than $150,000 a year. That jumpstart tax, there was polling back then that showed that about 70% of Seattle voters supported increasing progressive taxes on business, right? So I think your point is well taken that it's a progressive city and there is strong support for progressive revenue measures, as we've seen in all the levy and ballot measure, you know, campaigns that have been successful in the city over the years, many of which I did in the past, right? I ran, you know, helped run those campaigns. So I do think there's a potential opening there for some of the candidates running in the more left lane to characterize some of their opponents as not moderate, but kind of too conservative and out of step with the city's progressive values. I think we probably will see some of that contrast more in the general. And the challenge for those moderate candidates is to make voters feel comfortable that they are, in fact, progressive enough that their critiques about the status quo and what the city's done on things like homelessness and public safety are worth listening to. If you come across the voters as a straight up conservative, they're not going to give you the time of day or a cup of tea about any of these issues. But if you're progressive like them and you express qualms about how, you know, the left or the city council or whoever has dealt with some of these issues, you're going to get a much warmer reception. So I do think there's opportunity there.
I'm also thinking back to 2019 when we kind of at a certain point got that Amazon backlash. Amazon's not able to contribute directly to campaigns in Seattle anymore due to a change in our campaign finance laws. But we do see big money folks getting involved. Could we see another, you know, October surprise or whatever, where Bernie Sanders or other national figures weigh in on Seattle City Council races and folks who, you know, might otherwise be leaning towards these more moderate candidates will say, who aren't paying attention, will go, no, I'm going to, you know, I'm going with Bernie or whoever it is.
I think I'll be surprised if we don't see quite a bit of IE spending in the general election on both sides. So I think you will see not Bernie Sanders per se, I don't think, though he may endorse. I mean, certainly Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, I think, didn't they endorse NTK? I can't remember who all
well, the fact that you can't remember and the fact that she didn't win sort of suggests that, suggests that the influence of national level politicians in Seattle races is pretty limited.
But the Amazon thing played a big role in
the Amazon thing blew up in Amazon's face. Yeah, it changed the outcome of several city council races probably in 2019. But I do think we will see significant money flowing in both from progressive labor for left-lane candidates and from the business community for candidates that they support in the general election. I'll be shocked if we don't see pretty significant amounts of money, including maybe levels of money that dwarf what the campaigns actually raise themselves.
Well, that's I would say inevitable. Labor has typically been outspent by business by quite a bit. So, I mean, Sandy, you may have your finger on this more than I do, but, you know, generally, I mean, big business and small business, whatever, but primarily, you know, the local version of big businesses, real estate, attorneys, things like that, spend very, very heavily in favor of the more conservative candidates in each race. And, you know, I think it depends on who comes through. I don't necessarily see, you know, a huge IE for Bob Kettle against Andrew Lewis, but maybe in some of these other races, like Marin Costa versus Rob Sacca, we will see a big IE or two coming in from, you know, George Petrie and John Goodman and some of these other kind of real estate folks that don't want progressive people on the city council.
In 2021, in the mayor's race, I think it was pretty well even in terms of IE spending by labor and business. And at this stage, you know, heading to the primary, the pro Lorena Gonzalez PAC had raised even more. It seems like, you know, in those mayor's races, I don't know what it's going to be for city council races, but it was like, what was it, like $400,000 or $500,000 in independent expenditure spending and then another similar amount in direct campaign contributions. And are we going to see that?
I think mayor's races tend to be different. I mean, there was in 2019, I mean, there are so many conservative to what Sandeep would consider moderate, you know, not just the spending from business, but there was a lot of sort of, there's this group called Moms for Seattle. I mean, there are just lots and lots of you know, smaller PACs spending for the more conservative candidates in every race. So I think that those did, you know, when we're looking at city council races, those did outnumber and outspend the labor PACs because the mayor's race was such a focus. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think big spending is inevitable, is the headline, and it's all going to come from outside.
In 19, the spending was asymmetrical, largely because Amazon spent so much money and it blew up in their face, right? That $1 million that Amazon put in right at the end, 3 weeks out. I mean, look, in 2019, Unite Here, one single labor union put $750,000 just by themselves into a single city council race to elect Andrew Lewis over Jim Pugel. I still don't know why they spent so much money on Andrew over Jim, but they did. You know, it was a massive influx of outside spending into a city council race from a single entity. It didn't get the attention that Amazon spending got at the time, but it was pretty eyebrow. You know, I was like, whoa, man, that is a shit ton of money to put into a council race. For whatever reason, Unite Here really didn't like Jim Pugel, I guess. Or I think Erica's right. Historically, business had spent more. In recent years, there's been a lot more parity in that spending. And as spending on the IE side, as we've talked about, has skyrocketed, right?
All right, let's leave it there. Next time, let's take up District 4, District 2, District 5. We're not forgetting about other parts of Seattle here on Seattle Nice. Thanks, everybody, so much for listening to Erica C. Barnett, Sandeep Kaushik. I'm David Hyde. Quinn Waller is our esteemed editor. We also get support from Patreon. If you want to support it, you can also advertise. Contact us at RealSeattleNice@gmail. It's the same at Twitter, RealSeattleNice@Twitter. And thanks, everybody, so much for listening.